A lot of background is said for the Rashi, but it's an extremely, extremely important Rashi. What's happening? So it's the Tochacha, and in the Tochacha, it's pretty clear that there are two roads. If you follow the mitzvos, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu maintains the bris. And if you fail the mitzvos, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu exiles you into Galus. So it's either or. It's pretty binary. Keep the mitzvos, the bris is intact. You don't keep the mitzvos, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not violate the bris, but the bris won't be implemented the way it should be. Now, in the first part, which is, of course, very lopsided, because most of it is if you don't keep the bris, in the first part, the Torah says, if you follow the mitzvos, ufanisi alechem, this is pasuk test, vifreisi eschem, you have a lot of children, herbeisi eschem, you grow in numbers, vakimosi esprisi etchem, I'll keep the bris. We all know that, right? All of a sudden, out of nowhere, Rashi changes the entire narrative. The entire narrative. In a way that's extremely important historically and theologically. The Torah says, if you keep the mitzvahs, I'll keep the bris. We know what the bris is. The bris of Har Sinai, the bris of the mitzvahs, Chesed Nirayach, Bris Yaakov, Bris Avram. What does Rashi say? If you keep the mitzvahs, I'll keep the bris. A bris chadash, a new bris. Loka bris harishon, not the first bris, shefreisi eschem, that is shefartem, that you violated, el bris chadash, a whole new bris. And he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyah that one day I will create a whole new bris for you. What in the world is happening in Rashi? And by the way, why he gets to that, how he gets to that, the entire section is not about the old bris, but a new bris, with exponential growth and supernatural agriculture and a whole new bris if you keep the mitzvahs. And he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyah, Lamed Aleph. So where is this coming from? So let's take a step back and go back 1,000 years of history. Rashi lived in the 11th century. And he overlapped towards the end of his life with the Crusades. Now, he didn't write that much about the Crusades, but there happens to be a legendary story where Gilbert, or some thug named Gilbert, who was the leader of the first Crusades in 1096, who actually dies in the early part of the 12th century, so it's 1104 or 06, but he knew of the Crusades. There's some legendary story, of course, it sounds like Alexander the Great and Shimon HaTzadik, with his Gustav, Gilbert, who leads the first Crusades, terrifying warrior, hears of this great, great Jewish, pious scholar named Solomon, Shlomo, and he goes and he says, I want to see him, and he goes to Rashi's base medrash in Troy, and he calls out, and Rashi's hiding, no one's there, so he calls Rashi down, he says, look, I want you to tell me whether I'll be successful in the Crusades or not. So Rashi says, you'll go, you'll capture it for 3 days or something, but after the fourth day, the Arabs and Muslims will take it back from you, and you'll come back, and you won't even have 4 horses, it'll just be you and 4 horses. So he gets very angry at Rashi, and he says, this is a legendary story, probably didn't take place, but just to show you how Rashi was associated with the Crusades, so he says, if I come back, and I have more than 3 horses, I'm going to feed your flesh to the dogs, whatever. So he goes off, and he comes back with 4 horses, and he looks for Rashi because he had 4, not 3. Rashi said, you won't have more than 3, you'll only have 3. And as he enters the gates of Troy, a stone falls on one of the horses and kills the horse. He comes back with 3 horses and has to bow down to Rashi. It's impossible to know where the story took place, but it's Rashi's of that time. What Rashi didn't experience that much was not the Crusades, but the disputations. The big, big famous disputations took place in the 13th century, 1240 in Paris, 1260 in Barcelona. Okay, interesting, always interesting why it took place in the summer. Did people not have to work on their fields? People could come with these outdoor events. Happened in June and July. When 1240 was in July, June, it happened around June and July, right after Sefirot Omer, maybe after Mount Tara. They wanted to stick it to us. Either way, what's interesting is there's a lot of disputation about Judaism, even before the formal arguments in these courts of Europe. And the Christian theologians and the monks and the priests are always claiming God forsake you and God abandon you, and they're lifting psukim from Tanakh to prove their point. Now, the most frequently lifted pasuk, if you catch a missionary, the first pasuk he'll quote is this pasuk in Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah is a long parak in Lamed Vav, talks a lot about HaKadosh Baruch Hu regenerating, and then it ends as follows. Hine yamim ba'im ne'om Hashem, there are days that will come, v'karati esbeis Yisrael v'esbeis Yehuda bris chadasha. That's the name of the New Testament. Bris Chadasha, a new bris. Lo ka bris asher karasi es avosam, not like the old bris, when I took them out of Mitzrayim, asher efer es brisi v'rechibalti, ki zos ha bris asher chos es b'nei seach emem n'roshem, nesati es tarasam b'kirubam. That is the Christian typology missionary 101. Bris Chadasha. As I told you, that's how the original Christians called the New Testament, Bris Chadasha. And that's where they'll quote. Now, first of all, they should have gone to Herzog. Jesus should have gone to Herzog. Why? Because he would have learned to read the whole parak. Not just a few lines there, a few lines there. If you read the whole parak, there are 6 or 7 places in the parak where it's clearly referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For example, it's Tartila Chasanir Raicha Vaskal Sayah. It doesn't sound like you're leaving your wife for a new wife. Or Mini Kolech Mi Bechi, Tim's talking to Rachel, Vashabavanim Ligvulam. That's the parak. We just said it today. This parak. So there are dozens and dozens of canapus, and these were the conversations that took place in Barcelona and in Paris during the disputes. They'd come in with the Tanakh and the Theol, and these were some heavy hitters. These were not just, you know, missionaries on the subway. These were real scholars, Christians who had studied. They were sadly enough aided very often by Jewish mishmadim, Jewish people who had converted, who had a special agenda to stick it to the Jews. So these were the conversations. Ramban was standing there with the Tanakh, and they're reading Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph, etc. Okay, what is Rashi trying to do? If you read Bichul Kosai not like Rashi read it, then to a degree it's enabling this reading. Now, there are many, many ways not to read the Christian way, but it's enabling the reading, because what happens in Bichul Kosai? Shem says, if you keep the mitzvos, the bris is intact. If you don't keep the mitzvos, then you lose the bris. And then there's a break in the action. This is your offer. Let's see how you do. A couple hundred years pass. It's clear that the Jewish people don't always live up to their end of the bargain. So Yirmiyahu comes and says, by the way, reset, new bris. It was the old bris. These are the terms of the old bris. You keep it, the bris is intact. You don't keep it, the bris is gone. Now Yirmiyahu says, evidently you're not keeping it so well, so now let me choose another nation and give them a new bris. That's not the way to read it, but that would be the way to read it if you were a Christian. But what happens if you take Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph and you put it into Bichul Kosai? What if Hashem says, if you keep the mitzvos, then I'll give you this Yimos HaMashiach, supernatural, wonderful utopia? So Hashem is offering the bris chadasha, not as a replacement to the original bris, just as a expansion of the original bris for messianic potential. So Hashem says, if you keep the bris, then what has happened until then, not only will it be intact, but when you get to Mashiach, you'll have all these barren trees that will bear fruit and all these supernatural phenomena. If you don't keep the bris, what's going to happen? Well, Mashiach's not going to come, and it'll be delayed, and you have to get to it some other way. So by running Yirmiyahu into Bichul Kosai, Rashi's debunking Christian theology. He's saying it's not a break in the action. It's not like there are two narratives. The Bichul Kosai narrative, where keep the bris, keep the mitzvos, and if not, then you go into Galus, and Yirmiyahu says, okay, you failed, now there's a new narrative. But Rashi is weaving Yirmiyahu Lamed Aleph into the original narrative. If you keep the original bris, and they keep the original mitzvos, then that bris will amplify to all these supernatural events, and will be this bris chadasha described in Yirmiyahu. And if not, then the old bris is still intact. This messianic potential is going to be delayed. And of course, if you read the end of Bichul Kosai, you'll see this. And even if you don't keep the mitzvos, how does the tochacha end? Okay, so you won't get the new bris, because messianic potential will be deferred. But the old bris is still intact, though. Remember, you're still my people, and you're just in the holding position, waiting for Mashiach to come. So it's a fascinating Rashi that he's debunking, because Rashi was a product of the age. Just to give you another example of where Rashi is quietly tackling Christian theology. V'adam yada eschav. Remember in Bereishis, when they have children? So if you look at it, it happens after the Chet Adam Arishon. What does Rashi say? V'adam kvar yada eschav. They already had relations before the chait, and they already had, what's the word I'm looking for, impregnation, before the chait. Why is that important? Because for Christians, sexuality is a sin. It's original sin. It's after man sins, then it's part of original sin, and every person is born into sin. So I say, no. Adam and Chava had sex before the chait of Adam and Rishon. There's nothing sinful about sex. Not a response to Adam. So if you're really careful in Rashi, you see where he's offering. Again, they're all based on Chazal, but what he chooses to implant, what he chooses not to implant, has a lot to do with trying to tackle Christian theology. It's really fascinating, Rashi, because it comes out of nowhere. I'll just give you because I know it's late, but just because it's Parshas Bahar Bichul Kosai, so I'm not even going to explain it to you, I'll just tell you, turn your attention. This is a fantastic Shabbos, because there are two Parshios that aren't always twinned, and it's a competition for which opening Rashi is the more famous opening Rashi. Because Bahar has a famous opening Rashi, and Bichul Kosai has a famous opening Rashi. So just to remind you to pay attention to, the first one is Bahar Sinai Lemar Ma Inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. Why does the Torah juxtapose Shemitah and Har Sinai? So the famous answer is that just like Shemitah, all the details are given in Har Sinai. How do we know that? It's a whole different conversation. the whole Torah, all the details are given on Sinai. Is that really true? Or were later details given later on? So it's a fascinating question about the importance of details and when they were given. But this has become a phrase, not just in Beis Batei Medrash, but if you go out to the bus driver, and I don't know, the non-religious bus driver, and he says, I'll cost you 8 shekel, or whatever, 18 shekel, you do shalayim, and you say, does it come with a falafel? And he'll tell you, Ma'in Shmita Eitzel Har Sinai, 18 shekel for the bus ride. Like, what are you putting two things together that don't belong? It's become a phrase in modern Hebrew. It's this beautiful, beautiful terracing of Biblical Hebrew, Mishnah Hebrew, Gemara Hebrew, Rishonim Hebrew, Aramaic, Yiddish, Arabic, you know, Bukhari. So it's a prism of our people. You have so many different languages all coalescing into one. So there's a lot of Mishnah and Gemara. That's what I love about living in Israel. You'll hear non-from people use, you know, Gemara language, you know, Maishnahani, or, you know, Vadarabba, Vadarabba, or things like that, because they've seeped their way into the language. The second Rashi, in Parshas B'chukosai, is even more famous. Im B'chukosai Te'lechu, just going to say, B'chit to Amelim B'Torah. They have to work in Torah there. Maril Diskin was the Rav of the old Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim around the turn of the 20th century. I heard secondhand report, he used to give a Parsha shiur in his house every Friday night. People would come to. It wasn't a big shiur in an auditorium, Hechel Shama. The shiur in Maril Diskin, so Yishuv Lev Diskin, came to his house and sat in the shiur. And I heard second person report that in Parshas B'chukosai, he read the first Rashi, and he said, Shetu Amelim B'Torah, and he started crying. So he said again, Shetu Amelim B'Torah, and he started crying. He spent an hour saying three words and crying. Shetu Amelim B'Torah, Shetu Amelim B'Torah, Shetu Amelim B'Torah. Not everyone is Zoha to be Amel B'Torah. It doesn't say that everyone's Chayah to be Amel B'Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mis'av Hashem wants Mamelis B'Torah. So those people who have the Zchus to be Amel B'Torah are fulfilling Hashem's wish list. Not the commandments, but Hashem's wish list that should be Amel B'Torah. So two very famous Rashis, one in Parah Mechukos. Interesting, huh? Interesting Rashi. Yirmiyah Lamed Aleph.